When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow, Matt, fellow adventurers. We will be playing again as Sir Croakington. And so, we've finally got to the exit to Sarngard Isle. And we're going in aboard the Sarn Howl. And I think there's a fairly decent chance, considering we have a sorceress on a flying reptile who's very good at flying flames chasing after us, and who knows how many other things going on, there's a fairly decent chance this will end badly. But apparently not badly enough for us to stop us getting to Sarn Howl, because that's part two. So we know we get there, but we don't know how we get there. I don't think it's just going to be, we go on the boat, they take us there, then they drop us off and everything's fine. Don't think it'll be that, because this is Sarngard Isles, where there are wheels within wheels, conspiracies within conspiracies. Anyway, the Sarn Howl is the name of the chapter. The conclusion of the previous part, with the three of you seated above the small wooden boat. The vessel seems exceptionally unseaworthy, for you take comfort in the fact that Galvar doesn't seem the least bit concerned. At last, with both of his thick hands gripping the oars, the first mate takes a tiny craft out of the cove, through the inlet, and into the churning waters of the open ocean. You keep your eyes focused eastward as the creaking boat lurches out into the perilous tide. You desperately seek any sign of the vessel known as the Sarn Howl through the rolling wall of fog, and now the small boat that bears you, Owl, and Galvar is tossed about unmercifully as it slips into the churning tide just outside the sheltered cove. Galvar shows no outward signs of worry, however, and seems quite adept at manoeuvring the craft through the treacherous and foggy maze of waves. After several long minutes on the water, you're both drenched and chilled to the bone. Although Sir Croakington doesn't really care about the drenched, although the chilled is much, much worse for Sir Croakington, what with her being an amphibian and everything, and thus cold-blooded. So I'm just going to assume she summoned a friendly fire elemental to, you know, keep her warm. Yeah, I assume that instant she actually got on the boat, the disguise, the effect of the wing of disguise disappeared, and she turned back into a toad. She's a toad from now on in this narrative. So I don't have to remember what regular dude looked like, other than presumably incredibly handsome. You're beginning to think that perhaps finding the ship in the midst of the fog won't prove to be such a simple task, when Al's sharp voice rings out above the whine of the wind. "There she is," he cries, stabbing his finger eastward. You and Galvar turn your eyes in that direction and behold the dark, towering silhouette of a twin-masted galleon emerging from the fog. Suddenly, without warning, a large swell lifts up the small craft in which the three of you are seated and hurls the boat broadside towards the San Howl as Galivar desperately struggles to regain control. The old vessel, you realise that smashing into the hull of the massive ship could prove deadly. Alright, so I have some options here. I could use elementalism, seamanship, or fortification. If I had telekinesis at level 80 plus, I wonder. If I quit without saving, will the game let me try again? I'm going to try that. It's proven ground, so I'm not sure. You cannot quit at this time. The game literally says, no quitting. You cannot quit. But what if I just close the game? And then open it up again. Log in. Well, it just brings me straight back. Now, I'm sure probably if I did some... If a game update happened between... Of course, that's the whole point of Proving Grounds is you're stuck with the choices you made. And if they kill you, well, they've killed you and your reward is dramatically reduced. And that sucks. So, anyhow, telekinesis 80 plus. If I'd researched this in advance or remembered it from the various other times I've played through, I could have quite easily have grounded up telekinesis from 72 to 80, but I didn't, so I can't. So there's only the fifth option, which is the fourth option for Sir Croakington, because her telekinesis is only 72, is leap out of the boat before it strikes the San Howl. Once again, like I do with many choices, I shall go to random.org. Random.org gave me a 1, so I'm trying elementalism. It succeeded. 16 XP to elementalism. Although this is one of the very few times in the game you actually get to use seamanship. So maybe it was worth... Well, maybe I should have chose seamanship just so I've actually used it a few times. 16 XP to elementalism. You close your eyes and channel your power of elementalism. In answer to your summons, the wave carrying your small craft immediately sinks into the sea, dropping the boat back into the bold... Back into the churning surface with a loud clap. Glavar, with his eyes wide with disbelief, quickly regains control of the vessel. Well, makes sense. Water is one of the elements, so perfectly makes sense I could control it, even if only a small part of the water. And probably not for long, because, you know, the sea, it's big and it's angry. But we don't need very long. We just need enough time to get off this boat and onto the bigger boat, which can better handle this storm, as long as we don't, say, get driven onto some of the many, many, many sharp, pointy and treacherous rocks here about. But the captain will know all about that, and thus has probably put them in a place where things would have to go very wrong for them to die. But that doesn't mean that won't happen. As the small craft rides up against the base of the San Howl, you look up and spot several figures leaning over the ship's rails. Several lengths of heavy rope are tossed over the side, each landing within an arm's reach of your buffeting boat. I guess the elementalism power is slowly fading as the buffeting increases. In a matter of moments, the three of you have taken hold of the ropes and fastened them to your vessel. With a violent lurch, the three of you, still seated in the battered craft, are hoisted out of the raging sea and onto the deck of the sturdy galley. Now, they're taking the boat too. Makes sense. Don't want to lose your boat. It's bloody awkward to get a new boat. Well, apparently. Of course, it's pretty easy for Sir Croakington, because she can just... With the few times she's needed boats, she can just buy one or steal one very easily. But it's probably a different matter when, you know, you're not incredibly rich or incredibly good at stealing things, or, you know, actually, you know, have to deal with people in the future. Anyway, onto the boat. The small craft lands heavily on the deck of the ship, jarring you, causing you to struggle to regain your balance. Takes only a moment, however, for the three of you to recover and climb out of the boat, thankful to be standing on the damp, creaking timbers of the galleon's main deck. Several of the ship's crewmen move over and begin tending to the small boat, while commending the three of you for having made it on board. The Sands knows no place for a swim, he says, through clattering teeth. You couldn't hope to last very long out there today. Yes. Maybe if someone had transfogrified me into a shark instead, it'd be easier, but then all the other adventures would be much, much harder, because, you know, sharks, they don't have legs, which makes being on land sort of difficult. Although she'll probably find a way to do it anyway, because she's just tough like that. Al is about to speak, but suddenly steps back and pushes Stuart as a well-toned, lamp-bearing figure pushes his way through the line of men standing on the deck. The large, domineering, grey-bearded man steps forward and smiles upon catching sight of her. "What a sorry lot this is!" he roars, immediately bursting into an obnoxious fit of laughter. "A rough day for a spot of boating, to be sure! I'll have thought folks with your reputation might have better sense than any of that. Welcome aboard the San Hao." Captain Taindorn, with his sizable white hand outstretched to meet Owl and the shoulder cross, suddenly turns and curses at several of the crew who are loitering on the deck to his left. The startled men immediately spring into action and move off to attend to matters elsewhere. "Gotta keep that lot busy," he grumbles, turning and initiating his shoulder cross with Owl, who appears to be something of an old friend. "They'll work their hands to the bow it put to it, and I'm just the lad to put them to it. So, I see the three of you made it back from that accursed rock." "I had no doubt about Galavar, of course. He's the finest first mate I've ever had. Who's this other one here?" The captain tears his hand away from Owl's shoulder and moves directly up to the toad. I don't know how that happened," he says. he says, scooping up your hand before you might hope to protest and bestowing upon it a gentle kiss. "You, my dear girl, would be well advised to choose your travelling companions a bit more wisely. Only trouble awaits you at the end of the road with this one." Owl painfully sneers and then shakes his head, telling Taildorn he better watch himself. "The lady travels in my company as my protector," he says, casting you a quick glance, sideways glance. "You'd have a better chance against the fiercest serpent of the Sarn. I'll tend to my matters more mindfully if I shall find myself in your place, old friend. Owl's word, or perhaps the striking, almost sinister nature of his tone, seemed to have an immediate sobering effect upon Captain Taildorn. The captain apologised for the forward nature of his advances and begs your pardon. I guess this must be another one. This is another one of those scenes that is a little bit changed depending on whether you're a man or whether you pick male or female. Just a little bit though. And then everything goes back to normal very quickly because Owl was quite insistent on that. Owl is like, hey, let's not be having any gendered dialogue around here. We've got stuff to do. We ain't got no time to we don't know who people's gender are. There are T'Zahl around. Owl's words, perhaps. Owl asked the captain how long it will take to reach Swine Isle. The better part of a day, to be sure, he says, stretching his head and gazing about it. As another thick bank of fog now rolling across the decks of the galleon. I won't dare approach the Isle of the Quip of this, though. There's more teeth about those shallows than I care to contend with. The fog hangs in, or hold out in the split to make our approach by the light of dawn tomorrow. Yep, makes sense. Doesn't matter how early we get there, you know, if we're all dead. Because while Sir Croakington does have level 74 in Necromancer, she isn't, you know, mastered how to be a lich yet. And Owl definitely didn't sign up for that. And I think that's the sort of thing you got to prepare for. Yep. Owl nods as Galivar heads off to take up his duties as the vessel's first mate. Captain Taildorn leads the two of you to a small cabin at the ship's stern. There you find food and drink, and what simple comforts the Sarn Owl can provide awaiting you. If you need something else, don't fret to ask, says the captain, as he turns the head off and tends to the business of running his ship. I swear to you now, you'll get nothing you ask for, but I don't want you fretting over it all the same. The Sarn Owl is soon on its way, cutting east and then southeast across the turbulent waters of the Sarn Split. I guess the waves calm down. Owl takes, or maybe there's some progress he can make, even with the waves all waving about. Owl takes no interest in the food or drink provided by the captain, but tells you to eat your fill. When the voyage has been underway for several minutes, he joins you at the small table and tells you his every reason to hope the fog will lift. We shouldn't spend any more time aboard than is necessary, he says, his voice adopting a cautionary tone. Taildorn can be trusted, at least as much as the next foe, fellow, but I'll give no such benefit of doubt to the rest of his crew. They look to be a hungry bunch at best. And there's little that sort won't be driven to for the promise of a pouch full of gold. And of course, that's assuming that, you know, they're just regular people. I mean, we've had a boat before. Well, I saw the Silver Galleon or something. Anyway, it set off from Port Halleck. And it turns out it was most of the crew had been replaced by Kagari. And that caused a bit of a problem. Anyway, there was a big fight. That was after the giant serpent thing. But that's not really important right now. Because giant serpent attacks, it really doesn't really matter how devious the crew are. Because for that particular moment, They're not going to try any stuff. They're more concerned with fighting the big serpent. Yeah, it could be something like that, replaced with Kogari, maybe Tarzul. I'm not sure if there's... I mean, we have seen some skeletons that disguise themselves as humans, and presumably there are other critters that could do that as well. Or even just, let's see, the shadow think creatures. Anyone with a mastery of shadow magic could disguise anything as pretty much anything, more or less. Yeah, plenty of things that the crew could be, always be, or could replace the crew without... Replace the crew and... Which would easily be driven into whatever schemes are going along here. Because apparently whoever's... Well, it's probably not just one person. Several of the parties involved here can call upon various monsters. Monsters and minions. So, and they could easily infiltrate the crew. Or, you know, just let it be known amongst the various dens of ruffians that, hey, Sir Croakington will be trying to get off Sarngard Island. At the time, she may look like someone else called Regular Dude, but that will probably fade. Either way, both of them get either of them, and there will be a pouch of gold in it for you, or... If they're monsters and minions on the direct control, say, just do it. Do it. I command it. If you fail, you will suffer greatly. Either way would work. They're probably doing a bit of both, actually. A bit of both. In your conversation with Al, you learn that Shrine Isle is only approachable through a relatively narrow channel that runs towards its southern shore. Near the entire island is surrounded by what seamen call the teeth of the sea, towering columns of stone that jut out of the treacherous waters of Sarn at irregular frequency and angles, resembling the fangs of some giant beast of the deep, and proving deadly to ships that brave the shallows. Tyndorn's the only man I'll trust to navigate that course, he says. He makes his living running these waters, and he can be trusted to keep his mouth shut. He's one of the few men of his profession not possessed by the drink. The going proves slower than expected. Up by midday, the Sarn Isles covered only half the expected distance. Captain Teldor returns to the cabin periodically to update you and Owl on the ship's progress, and tells you both that it will likely be dusk before Sarn Isle will be in sight. Owl seems somewhat distressed by how long the journey is taking, but he appears to come to terms with the fact the matter is beyond his control. You're attempting to get some rest on one of the banks against the white wall of the cabin, when Owl approaches and spreads out a small, tattered scrap of parchment that bears a crudely sketched map upon its weathered surface. There's a tall peak in the middle of the island, he says, stabbing his thin finger into the centre of the map. On top of that is the shrine that gives the place its name, or what's left of the shrine, to be quite precise. Who knows wherein you're going to find a couple of things very near and dear to our cause. Yes, our cause. Our paths are really quite the same, you know. You ask Al what he hopes to find here. Information, he says, rolling up the map and tucking it inside his vest. There's supposed to be a verse engraved on the walls of the temple, a verse that provides clues to something long hidden, something we will seek in the city of Cardson. There is something else, though, and I think that you... A shrill cry from the outside from outside the cabin startles you an owl in mid-sentence. The cry is repeated several times. Land for starboard! Land for starboard! With owl following swiftly at your heels, you make your way out of the cabin and to the ship's whale. There, little more than a black speck on the horizon, now clearly visible through the wispy remnants of dissipating fog, is the lonely silhouette of Swine Isle. The sun has already begun to set, casting the last of its crimson and golden rays across the churning surface of the sun. Well, there's that sorry lot, cries Captain Starnhold, striding up next to you. As I promised, there he is, and there they are. Gaze upon that lot of teeth. Not whisk an approach to morning's light. You follow Tundle's sweeping finger and spot no less than 36 jagged points of rock poking up through the sea. In the rapidly fading light of day, the angled points do indeed resemble the teeth of some large beast.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Despite the captain's unwillingness to risk the perilous approach, roach the eyes, the dust settles in. Owl tells you that he has reservations about spending the night aboard the Sarn Howl. "You're an easier target aboard this ship," he says, after making certain the two of you are quite alone in the small cabin. I don't think we've forgotten the wily one, the Chodwick. I have a feeling, and it's not the last we'll see of her, whoever she is. You ask Al if he's considering taking a small boat to the Isle tonight. It tells you the thought has crossed his mind. That, of course, provides its own dangers, he says. I'll lead the decision up to you, Sir Crokington. What do you think of it all? Well, I agree with Al that are all about remaining a more visible target while aboard the Sanhao. The thought of piloting a small, old craft through the dark, treacherous waters that surround Swine Isle and spending a lonely night on its dark shores doesn't seem particularly appealing. So, I've got four options. Divination to just magically get some vibes about what's happening. Woodmanship, just to, I don't know, I really don't know what woodmanship will do. Alright, decide to spend the night aboard the Sanhao, or decide to go ashore immediately. Those are the two wheel choices. I'm going to use woodmanship because I'm not really sure how that will do things. Woodmanship. Well, it was unsuccessful. You're not able to determine anything further regard to which course of action might prove less perilous. You know what? I'm going to check the wiki for this. Wiki has been checked and, well, it doesn't reveal what the divination or woodman reveal to you. And of course, I could just scroll down a little bit and see what happens if you, whether you stay or leave, but no. But even though I know, I'm going to pretend I don't know. All right, so I know I'll just have to go to random.org again and just flip a coin. Number two. Apparently, I'm deciding to go ashore immediately. You decide to go ashore at once, risking the night voyage to the Isle aboard a small craft. And I was quick to say he thinks it's the wiser choice. Got an uneasy feeling about spending the night aboard this creaking beast, he says. I feel that whatever dangers await us aboard the shore in the dark can be no worse than what I fear surrounds us here. You now leave the small cabin and make your way to the forecastle when you find Captain Turnvarn Gravar. Your request to head to the island at once is met with surprise, but Captain immediately orders a small oar craft be prepared to carry you to the distant shore of Swarl Island. I'll get up on those rocks as best I can, he says, referring to the jagged stone teeth that surround the island. If the two of you are brave enough to attempt the jaunt in the dark, I'll try not to talk you out of it. What a lot you are! The Sanhao moves as close as it can to the Isle, to a west within only a few dozen yards of one of the larger points of rock jutting up from the depths of the sea. Now, I wonder, are these natural formations, or were they created to make getting to the Isle really, really difficult, but not impossible? Well, not possible on a boat. I mean, if you could fly, say you had a Choterik, or you could teleport, or you befriended a dragon, not that all those teeth wouldn't mean anything. But weird that if they were just going to block off the island, why would they leave a way for a boat to get there? Because I think we all know the people who have been commanding the Tazal wouldn't be stopped by these teeth, but maybe it is natural. Who knows? Jutting up from the depths of the sea. I suppose the two of you are capable of rowing your way ashore, says the captain, slapping Gamvar on his back as he loads the small craft with several large sacks. Galavar seemed to some rations, that sort of thing. We'll wait here 3 days at most, then leave you for dead. That's generous on my part. The Sarn's no place to linger this late in the year. And that's just the regular peril. With all the peril that just seems to follow Sir Crokington wherever she goes, especially on Sargard Isle, and, well, near it, That's even more so. When all is set, you are now aboard the boat and are lowered into the water. As you slip away from the ship, you glance back to see Captain Teodor and Galvar standing at the rails, waving to you. Owl gladly allows you to assume the duty of rowing the boat. And despite the choppy water and the plentiful exposed rock tips, within less than an hour, you find yourself drifting into a sheltered cove on the southern edge of Swan Isle, towards a stony beach. So no checks to get past the teeth. Yeah, I guess getting a small boat past the teeth is a lot simpler than getting a big boat past. But of course, the small boat won't be able to actually get to the teeth. You know, unless it was made by Polynesians or something, who are experts at making small, very tough boats. But there are no Polynesians around here, so we've got our big boat that can survive the sea and small boat that can get past, that can, if we're lucky, get past the teeth, and neither of them can do both. And, well, the small boat, very easy to destroy, save your flying witch. Same for the big boat, actually. Yeah, it's difficult no matter what you do. As you near the middle of the cove, you encounter some unexpected rough water. Powerful eddies swirl past, sending the small craft into a series of dizzying spins. It is difficult. And with only great effort, you are able to right the boat, continue towards the beach. The owl has just begun to comment on the approach to the beach when you spot something out of the corner of your eye. It's a sight that makes your blood run cold. Your gaze is swiftly drawn downward to one of the sacks that Galvar tossed aboard the boat. For several moments, you're not certain if perhaps your eyes are playing tricks on you in a dim light. But when the owl suddenly cries out in alarm, your fearful observation is substantiated. One of the bags is moving. So is it an evil bag or is something in the bag? We shall see. Before either you or owl can react to this new and alarming turn of events, a massive swarm of stone-backed spiders spill out of the mouth of the writhing bag. Honestly, if I was going to attack someone with a lot of insects, I probably wouldn't go for spiders. They're scary, but spiders don't really have group tactics. In fact, if you put a load of spiders in a bag, they'll probably get all panicked and stressed, and mostly have killed each other before they can, you know, launch their attack. But I don't know, magic stuff, maybe to put a little magic on them so they're paralyzed until the bag opens. But even then, now if I was going for a bunch of insects to, you know, attack someone that I could hide in a bag, so probably I'd probably just gone for snakes. Maybe just one big thing would have been worse, but yeah, I guess if it's lots of small things, it means you could miss one easily enough. No, if I was going for insects, I'd have gone for ants. Because ants, you know, can work together, and them just keeping it, and it's a lot more credible that they'll just keep attacking until they're all dead, you know, assuming you manage to just, I don't know, probably just pick some of the soldier cast out and then just spurt some pheromones around to get their ire up. And then they'll just keep attacking until you or them are dead. And it's not like you could even, say, throw them off the boat. Because if you do that, they'll just biovac together and come right back. Yeah. That's a thing that ants can do, you know, they can link up to make themselves a boat. But maybe they just thought spiders. Spiders are cool. The aggressive arachnids, each near the size of your palm, begin scurrying up your legs, seeking any exposed flesh into which they can stink their deadly fangs. Now that's not really a spidery thing to do. Because spiders, they kind of like care if they die. Not like ants. Ants, meh. I mean, they wouldn't actively seek death, but, you know, if dying was part of, you know, doing their job, they'd be like, yeah, whatever. There's more ants. There's always more ants. Yeah, but, yeah, bag full of spiders, just a more villainous thing to do. Maybe they're not actually that smart. Yeah. Well, anyway, got to deal with this bag full of spiders. Owl cries in alarm as he desperately swipes at the stoneback, swiftly making their way up his torso. No less than 18 of the deadly spiders are rapidly climbing over you. As you hurriedly attempt to rid yourself of the predatory creatures that cling to you as the small boat rocks dangerously in the water from the sudden commotion aboard. Oh, anyway, picking a number. Bonus of 19. 19 from agility, 10 from spirit, 20 from luck, 20 for woodmanship. Or maybe since this is a fantasy world, we managed to find some sort of eusocial type of spider. Because I think it seems that a lot of the spiders in fiction just default to eusociality. We have social spiders, but they're an entire tier below. There's several tiers of sociality below ants. You have just maxed out eusociality. It's an entirely different. They're operating on a level far above us and anything else, really. I mean, I guess termites are also on the same level, but that's pretty much it. It's just on the tier list of sociality, it's ants, termites, and you scroll down a lot and you find everything else. Alright, pick now. 105, success. You manage to swipe off several of the spiders without being bitten. Owl cries out in alarm as he desperately swipes at the stonebacks, swiftly making their way up his torso. A dozen of the deadly spiders are still climbing upon you. I guess they're a lot more deadly for Sir Croakington because they're just about her size. And unfortunately, this isn't one of those spiders that she's befriended earlier, like some toads and frogs would. So she just looks tasty. You hurriedly attempt to rid yourself of the predatory creatures that cling to you as the small boat walks dangerously in the water from the sudden commotion overhead aboard. Picking a number. Bonus 69. 19 from agility. I guess by changing my equipment I could make that a 20, but meh. 10 from spirit, 20 from luck, 20 for woodmanship. Got to get 100 or more, or they will get me. Pick now. 130, success. You manage to swipe off several of the spiders without being bitten. Alright, I guess all the spiders will probably just balloon themselves away. And I hope they have a nice time. You know, preferably without killing anyone, but I'm not going to be picky. Al cries out in alarm as he desperately swipes at the stone back, swiftly making his way up the torso. Six of the deadly spiders are still climbing over you. You horribly attempt to rid yourself of the predatory creatures that cling to you as the small boat rocks dangerously in the water from the sudden commotion aboard. Now, this isn't more of a picking, this is more like a wrestling for Sir Croakington. She's just having to jump up and heap and judo toss the spiders aboard one at a time. Because currently she is small. She considered getting big, but that just gives her more to bite. So it's actually just easier when you're about their size. Then you can judo throw them. And then they'll just balloon away. Can these spiders balloon? Who knows? I'm going to say they can. Right, picking a number. 89, 86, failure. Sir Croakington manages to judo toss a few of the spiders overboard, but one of them sneaks up behind her while she's trying to toss the other and bites her. The fearsome arachnid promptly injects her with powerful poison. 21 damage. As the spider's deadly venom surges through your veins, you struggle to stay upright in the small boat. Al cries out in alarm as he desperately swipes at the stoneback, swiftly making their way up his torso. Three of the deadly spiders are climbing over you. You hurriedly attempt to rid yourself of the predatory creatures that cling to you as the small boat rocks dangerously in the water from the sudden commotion aboard. And maybe the reason that they're not using ants is that ants only come in this world, they come in regular ant size and way too big to hide in the sack. There's no middle ones. There's no middly sized ants, you know. No fist size ants, just really big and bug size. That's it. No middle ground. Maybe that's why they're not in. Because, I mean, spiders, yep, we've seen big old. We've seen spiders in all the sizes, pretty much, from the regular teeny, teeny spiders, like in Blalak's necklace, to Ugusu in that fire temple, who was enormous. And maybe even bigger ones somewhere. Like if Zathuruk decided to walk a spider body for a bit, that would surely be cage kaju size, pretty much. Picking a random number. I don't know, bonus 69, success 100. I think we might be able to get them all out of the way this time. Pick now. 168 success. Sir Croakington manages to wrestle the last of the spiders attacking her overboard. At last, after several harrowing moments, the remainder of the spiders are flung from the boat. Owl quickly takes hold of the spinning remaining sacks and tosses them overboard as well. Maybe there was some food in them, but I guess we can't take the risk. Stunned by the sinister near fatal attack, you and Owl share wide-eyed stares as you row the small boat towards a stony beach with renewed vigour. When you reach the hot shallows, Owl hops out of the craft and onto the waist-deep water and proceeds to drag the boat ashore. I cannot for a moment believe that Galavar knew anything about what was in that sack, says Owl as you step onto the beach. Someone was certainly determined to see to it that we never reached the Isle. I should have never allowed those bags to be tossed aboard without looking at them. Yeah, but it was a very quick thing, so, I mean, it didn't occur to Sir Croakington to look at them either. I mean, you trust Galvar, you trust Tenneborn, I guess you just assume they checked, but apparently, so they probably did check. They probably checked earlier. They probably actually made up the bags earlier, but someone sneaked these spiders in the interim. And, well, they just didn't notice that happened, and maybe they should have checked too, but, yeah. Alright, well, the cat, they've both got a lot of things to worry about. Together, you and Al drag the boat ashore, place it behind a large rock, taking care to ensure that it's not visible from the water. Then, you turn your attention to your newfound surroundings and find that even in the darkness, your first glimpse of Shrine Isle reveals the wild and rugged beauty of the legendary island. Al points to a towering rocky peak at the centre of the island, perhaps less than a mile from where you now stand, and tells you the ruins of the ancient shrine from which the Isle acquired its name are supposed to sit upon its summit. "When we get to the top of that," he says, moving a small cloth-wrapped object sewn into the inside of his vest, "we'll be looking for that engraving I mentioned, and also the second part of this." I'll hand you the object, and when you remove the cloth that covers it, you're surprised to be gazing down upon a small leather-bound book. You quickly open the book and discover that its pages are covered in a script that appears to be a complex code of symbols. Your pulse begins to race when you immediately realise that the contents of this book are eerily familiar to the one that you possess, the leather-bound journal you discovered in Mergsbrough before you ever set foot on Sarngard Isle. Al promptly snatches the book back. "Yes," says the owl, as if he's managed to read your thoughts. "Same bit script contained in the book you found. Pray that you still retain it, of course. After all, it's the third and final piece of a rather remarkable set." And that finishes this scenario. With 512 experience to general, and 64 experience to all skills and powers. And this unlocks part 2, which is Shrine Isle, which has 6 parts to it. And I'm not even going to read the scenario names, because they'll be not exactly spoilers, but spoiler adjacent. Danger stalks you every step on the shores of this legendary isle. And the first part is called Welcome to Shrine Isle. And I assume this welcoming will not be a friendly welcoming when we are given mead and small cakes. Small cakes, and someone helps explain what the heck is going on. I assume this fight will probably be more fighting things and bursts of flame. I don't exactly remember what happened, because that's the thing. Swift is just too big to fit in your brain, unless you're Matthew Yarrows. He has a very big brain. But anyway, next time, we shall be continuing with Proving Ground 6. But until then, 50 minutes. Well, until then, farewell, fellow adventurers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.